Welcome to CUTV News Radio, where our hosts Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters talk to today's top thinkers from all around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas that you can put to use in your personal or professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, we dig deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. CUTV News Radio, it's the show where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us. It is a pleasure to have you with us today. We are live worldwide on CUTV News Radio. This is Jim Masters, and when we have an opportunity to welcome you to our broadcast series, it's always wonderful because of the fact that, you know, we talk about so many incredible in-depth topics, and we welcome our audience all around the world right now. It is 11 a.m. Eastern here at the Broadcast Center on Friday, September 6, 2019, and we welcome everybody listening in the United States, Canada, and globally. I'm also very excited to welcome to CUTV News Radio, and we love when we have an opportunity to welcome brand new guests to our program. And today on the program, we are spotlighting and featuring Dr. Susan Kavler Adler. And she is a clinical psychologist and psychoanalytic psychotherapist who has been practicing in Manhattan, New York City, in Lower Manhattan for more than 40 years. You know, psychology and psychoanalysis as clinical practices have a depth and range that are generally not known to the general public. So many people resort to medication when in-depth experiential work to understand oneself and to prevent the repetition of self-sabotaging behavior is available with trained clinicians that are in mental health. And that's where the doctor comes in. She's been in the field for, again, many, many years, and she is distinguished by her ability to innovate and experiment in a session with a client, as well as to listen very deeply to the many levels of communication as well. She says she's the instrument to tune into the unconscious thoughts and feelings of the patient, but she's also open to improvisational states as well. The psychoanalyst is the expert to help the patient sort through their confusion, to recognize what their mind is saying to them, and to recognize how repressing the unconscious parts of themselves might be contributing to their problems. She works with adults, but part of that work is to help the adult work with the child inside, that inner child. This also relates to understanding and healing trauma. According to Dr. Kavler Adler, our interpretations of life come from the underlying psyche fantasies we carry with us. Uncovering your fantasy and making it conscious helps you have choices rather than compulsions. She says many people are very much repeating negative patterns over and over again and self-sabotaging and also sabotaging relationships in the process. She allows her patients to have the space for all of their thoughts and feelings that come up in the moment and helps them see defensive operations that interfere with their being fully present in the moment, which is also related to blocks in creativity and to blocks in love and relationships and intimacy as well. She's allowing thoughts and feelings, but also welcoming psychic fantasies, dreams, nightmares, wishes, desires, the whole gamut. This willingness to explore what's possible in human psychology extends to Dr. Kavler Adler's writing as well. She specializes in object relations, a school of thought that explores how the nature of our need for connection and relationships, which developed early in life, continues to affect our inner experience in the present. She's the author of 70 articles and 6 books, and she's the founder and the executive director of the Object Relations Institute, a state-chartered educational institute that trains psychotherapists and psychoanalysts. One of her books, entitled Mourning, Spirituality, and Psychic Change, A New Object Relations View of Psychoanalysis, discusses how when people open up to grief, mourning, and loss, they open up all kinds of new possibilities. This developmental mourning process awakens spirituality, creativity, and even erotic passion. Developmental mourning helps those in the process of psychotherapy to find their true voice as the formerly blocked or inhibited parts of the person emerge with a depth of feeling loving and intimate relating, that feeling of that depth and that important level of feeling loving and intimate relating is so essential. We're going to talk about all of this and so much more, and it's extraordinary body and breadth of work that Dr. Susan Kavler-Adler has shared with her clients and patients, and it's a wonderful opportunity for us to really dig in deep here on our broadcast with the doctor. She, again, is in Manhattan, New York, and it's our pleasure to welcome her to this episode. This is part one of an exclusive three-part series with us here. She's with us today. She'll be back with us on September 20th at 11 a.m. Eastern, and then also on Friday, September 27th at 11 a.m. Eastern as well. Dr. Kavler-Adler, it's so wonderful to have you with us here on CU TV News Radio Live. We really appreciate it, and we welcome you to the show today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
It is our pleasure. And, you know, we were talking a little bit about what inspires all of us to do the things we do in life and some of the work that really speaks to us and reflects who we are as individuals. When you look at your own journey and your path, doctor, what are some of the things that inspired you, that sort of triggered this real keen, deep interest you have for the world of psychology?
Yeah, well, I would say there are four things that come to mind immediately. One is that when I suffered an early loss in my own life, which was my father's death at 10 years, when I was 10 years old. And when I was in my 20s, I began the real mourning process for that. And I started to realize how much facing these kind of very painful feelings of loss and renewing love also opened up creativity and capacities for love and connection and for more sustained loving connections and where one deals with one's anger but sustains relationships. So I realized that there were potential talents and abilities that could be developed through facing one's deepest pain, which often relates to losses. So we all suffer loss in life, but having such an early loss really allowed me to understand the powerful clinical value of the mourning process. And then later I also had studied the British object relations theorists, including Melanie Klein, and I realized that she had been beginning to speak about mourning as a very critical clinical and developmental process, and that related to the development of my theory of developmental mourning and how that can get blocked by all kinds of defensive processes that we form because of the fear of facing the pain of loss and of the pain of the rage that often goes along with the loss from early childhood. But that was a major aspect of my connecting with psychological process and clinical process. And I had been earlier in I was a dancer and I was a writer, and I these were my native abilities. And so I realized that I had the capacity to tune into other people, both nonverbally and verbally, in a very acute way in the moment, and use my sensitivities on both levels to tune into people, and not just at the conscious level, but the deeper unconscious level. I also had studied literature. I have an honorary doctorate in literature as well as my PhD in clinical psychology. And I really was combining psychology and literature at first when I got my doctorate. And in literature, of course, we study other characters that we vicariously experience, some of the most deepest feelings of desire, fear, pain, and loss with. And so that seemed to also give me a sense that if I could listen to characters so deeply in literature, I could listen to people in the treatment room as well. And I was told by someone when I was studying in Italy when I was 18 years old in Florence, I was with someone else who was studying at the Syracuse University's Villa School there in Florence at Firenze. And she had said to me that she thought I should think about being a psychologist because I listened so deeply to her. So I think all these things contributed, plus my enormous need to be creative and deal, and I love dealing with helping people open up their capacity to express themselves and to face the blocks and obstacles to that. I work with people with writing blocks or performance blocks or whatever that just interfere, or blocks to communication with in interpersonal and intimate relationships. So I've always been wanting to see how to help people open up blocks to their tremendous need for self-expression and to find their unique voice and their unique self through the process of self-expression, and often to find the creative avenues, the particular ways that they want to express themselves. And that also opens up through facing loss and mourning. Also facing regret. I have a book called Anatomy of Regret. And when one faces one's regrets consciously rather than being unconscious, one is able to learn from regret and not keep repeating self-sabotaging patterns. Also, some of my books on women artists and writers show what I'm talking about with how early trauma influences the creative process and how one can move forward with it if one gets clinical treatment to help with the trauma or can keep repeating the same themes in creative work as well of the early trauma if there is no therapeutic process with another person who could support them through this mourning process that I'm talking about. So those are some of the things that come to mind.
It's incredible when you really look at it and you share it in that way, because, you know, obviously you were inspired early on and this has led to this exquisite career that you've had and so many lives that you've touched along the way. You know, obviously you have this love of the understanding of the human condition and of psychology, and it's so interesting for you. Let's talk about how this all led, as we dive right in, to something called object relations, that clinical work. Define that for us and your interest in that and how you apply and work with that as well, Doctor.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, object relations really just is another way of talking about internal relationships that affect our external relationships, not only with other people, but with our own work and creative work and the way we are in the world. So this goes all the way back to the first 3 years of life where the individual self starts to form. And often there are early traumas through the disruption of bonding with the early mother that can disrupt that developmental process towards a unique and autonomous and self-expressive person. Others get, you know, through that without trauma, and then their losses are at a later level, and they can deal with those losses in life and through creative work. When there's that earlier disruption, as I show with the women artists and writers I write about, there is a definite need to get treatment to help with the problem, to have the support of another to help them deal with the more primitive feelings and thoughts and psychic fantasies that come up around the early trauma. So object relations means we have an internal world that we carry around with us. You can think of it as, you know, just inside of you. I mean, we use the word psyche, but it's inside our mind and body, because when we are not in touch with those inner relationships that we formed early on, they can cause us compulsively to just act out the same ways that we sabotage ourselves when we were very young, when things didn't go well. But there's also healthy internal relationships that allow us to grow and open up to new experience with people and to develop the capacity for intimacy and creativity. I've written about fears of intimacy and fears of success and fears and also about envy that blocks us. So all this relates back to early relationships. And the most early relationship we have is as an infant, and then those first 3 years of life is a test with the parent to see if we can begin to separate and become who we are, separate from the dependence on our early mother and our family and parents. Some people navigate through this with the support of good mothering and parenting, and others have to get help to deal with it. But those people who have healthier relationships in their inner world also have psychic conflict, conflicts between different parts of themselves about their erotic and aggressive feelings, about their anger or rage, the conflicts about fears of hurting others or and conflicts around competition and erotic desire, and conflicts around how one uses one's aggression in an assertive way rather than in a destructive way towards oneself and others. So many people turn their aggression against themselves in their very persecutory, attacking way. With writers, I talk about the negative internal editor, but it's a negative internal, like a negative internal voice or part of yourself that can obstruct using one's healthy capacities for relationship. So there's object relations. One way of defining it is I have this monthly 4-hour therapy morning and support group. And in the beginning, I use a psychic visualization, which is a guided psychic visualization. So I ask everyone to close their eyes and breathe. And then I go through guiding them to listen to see who comes up from inside, not someone they're directing their, you know, cognitively with their conscious mind, but someone who seems to emerge from within or a part of the self or another that comes up, and then to speak to that person while their eyes are closed and they're breathing deeply. And then I ask them to speak from their stomach, where there are feelings of hunger and anger and rage often, and see what the desire and the aggression that might come up with talking to that person that comes up from within. And then I ask them to move to the heart area and to see if there's a connection with their heart, and to speak to the person who comes up from inside through their heartfelt feelings, which would involve feelings of longing and love and loss. And so they're very different feelings in the heart area from those more instinctual and aggressive and hungry feelings from the stomach area. But they're talking to this inner person who comes up, and often that's how someone deals with losses after separations or deaths or any kind of loss of someone. They can speak to that person as they've internalized them inside. And that then interconnects with their more primal others that they internalize early in life. So they're speaking to this other. They also start to speak to often their mother or father, and often to parts of themselves too. And then they we go through this with two people who come up, and then they also share as they open their eyes and say goodbye to whoever they've been speaking to. They also share then with the other person, with the other people in the group, and that way they get to share a journey about opening up to their inner life. Along with this, you know, we talk about dreams and fantasies, and most of my work is individual. This is how I work with a group, but I work mostly with individuals. I also work with couples, and I work with dreams with them as well. And whether somebody is lying on the couch to allow things to come up from their inner life and or sitting up, it's always about what does the person need to express right now in the moment. And what are they afraid to express, and why are they afraid to express it? So I'm there, of course, to help them understand that and to see that there are many different parts of themselves that they have to deal with in order to become a whole person and to start to own these parts of themselves rather than to repress or dissociate from them so that they're more limited in their lives if they do that. And also that causes the repetition compulsively of patterns of old behavior that can be self-sabotaging and interfere with growth in the present towards new creative ways of being in the world and with others.
Do we sometimes also get caught up in repeating the negative patterns, obviously, because it is the familiar, but also sometimes as strange as it may sound, it is safer. There's less risk we feel, and maybe there's less chance of rejection and fear or whatever the case may be. So we stay stuck in these negative patterns because it's what we know, and because we're actually, even though it's not helping us, we're not growing or transcending, we feel safe even though it's negative.
Right. Well, yes, people cling to the familiar. But what people in the general public don't usually realize is they not only cling to the familiar old ways of being, even though they can be very self-destructive, they also and self-sabotaging, and sabotaging to both relationships and to one's evolution into creative self-expression in one's work and one's career and one's life in general. But in addition to clinging to what's familiar that may be self-destructive and self-sabotaging, it also gets eroticized. There are strong instinctual parts of ourselves that we repress into our unconscious. And in psychoanalysis and psychoanalytic psychotherapy, we're able to free ourselves by opening these things up to consciousness. And that way, we're not only in control of things that are ambushing us from behind when they're unconscious, but we're also able to really have a dialogue and dialectic with these parts of ourselves and allow them to energize us and to give us passion for life and for creative self-expression and to connect with others in intimate and loving relationships. So there's not only clinging to the familiar that's destructive, but there's also the way it gets instinctually eroticized, or a kind of a combination of aggression and eroticism makes it very intense. And this is why we use the word addiction, because it's not just a compulsion because it's familiar, but it becomes addictive because it's like it doesn't have to be like alcohol or drugs in as an actual substance. It's addictive because it has this instinctual intensity, and it doesn't necessarily. It can be to a physical substance, but it can also be a clinging to, for example, just being hostile or aggressive in one's relationships, or distancing, or other things that what people don't often realize is that they're addicted to the intensity itself of repeating things that consciously they want nothing to, you know, they want to change.
It's so important to understand that and really appreciate that as well. And, you know, it can get, I'm sure, very emotional and very intense for some people too, because they're emoting and opening up and they're sharing elements of that inner child that they mm-hmm. cling to, so they can be very vulnerable. But you create an environment for them that is trusting and safe, so they can emote and they can feel like they're in good hands, right? And that's very important to establish that sense of trust and safety, so they can get deep in and allow everything to rise to the surface.
Right. And part of establishing that sense of trust is helping people to be free to express their anger and disagreements with the psychoanalysts and the psychotherapists. It's helping them to see how they block right in the moment with the therapist their whatever thoughts might come into their mind, or how they might react without being consciously aware of what they're saying. So that's also part of how the trust is built within the relationship, that they feel free to say whatever comes into their mind towards the analyst or psychotherapist as well, and to understand also things they might project onto their therapist that comes from this inner world I was talking about, where their old relationships have been internalized within their psyche and their minds.
That's really what it's all about. And, you know, ultimately, we're all trying to make sense of something that doesn't have much explanation at the moment, just experience this experience of being alive. So you sign up for all the confusion when you walk into the universe, and it's very difficult sometimes to make sense of it. And, you know, even today with all the pressures of, you know, everybody feels so overworked, overwhelmed. There's social media, there's, you know, 24-hour news cycles. There's a lot of things coming up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it can really be overwhelming. We're also creating these fantasies that are driving our behavior too. So it really is important to have a dialogue about all of this, right?
Yes, the dialogue is so critical. And in fact, in one of my books, The Creative Mystique, from Red Shoes Frenzy to Love and Creativity, which is one of the two books on women, well-known women artists and writers in the creative process and mourning process and how they interact. The other book is The Compulsion to Create, Women Writers and Their Demon Lovers. In both of these, there is... in The Creative Mystique, I talk about my idea of psychic health. And psychic health involves a freedom to both love one, the other, and to connect with one's own inner creative process. Some people, the women artists and writers I wrote about who had this compulsion to create, where they kept repeating early trauma and it eventually could undermine their work and their lives and prevented them from having healthy relationships. The compulsion to create is when somebody's so stuck in the internal world that they can't open up to the outer world enough, because they keep going inside and recapitulating these old internal relationships, and it can diminish creativity, and it can prevent relatedness with people outside in intimacy and love. And then there are love addicts who do the opposite. They cling to people outside, but they have no sense of their inner life. And so in the theory that I have of psychic health is about how when we open up blocks, obstacles, defenses, and get to these deep, deep psychic fantasies that relate to early relationships, people are opened up into a healthy, organic flow of from the inside, connecting to one's inside and one's creativity, and then naturally opening up to the other into interpersonal communication, love, and intimacy, and then the flow back to the inside. There should be a flow back and forth, a dialectic. And when that dialectic is obstructed, then they're stuck either, you know, not being in touch with their potentials inside and their talents and creative ability and their own personal voice and just clinging to the other externally and what the other thinks, or they can be stuck on just going back into their old relationships and their internal world and not not opening up to others outside. So in health, we have a natural organic flow from the inside to the outside, and there's always a dialectic and a back and forth, and it's not being stuck inside or outside without that reconnecting back and forth from one's inner world to one's outer world. Because when we have healthy external relationships that grow, we also nurture and internalize more for our inner world and our creative process in life.
It's so important. It's incredible work that you're doing, Doctor. And I thoroughly look forward to our continued conversations together that we have here on CUTV News Radio Live. I also encourage folks to go to your website, and that is KavlerAdler.com. I'll spell that out for everybody. That
yes,
is www.kavaleradler.com. Doctor, a real honor and a pleasure to have you with us here on CUTV News Radio Live. We really hit upon some wonderful conversation and topics today, and we look forward to your being back with us for the next episodes again coming up here on CUTV News Radio September 20th at 11 a.m. on Friday, and also Friday, September 27th at 11 a.m. Eastern as well. Thank you so very much, Doctor, for being with us on the show. It was a pleasure.
You're welcome. And there are descriptions of my books and of my monthly groups on my website, and there are references to articles. But I can be emailed at any time as well.
Perfect. All right. That's wonderful. Thank you again for all that you do and for being with us today and sharing it with us on the broadcast. Again, folks, go to the website to connect with Dr. Susan Kavler-Adler by going to KavlerAdler.com. Jim Masters here, thanking you for your time. This time till next time. For all of us here, we appreciate the doctor being with us today. She'll be back for part 2 and 3 in September. And I thank you for being with us on this episode of the broadcast as well. You have a wonderful rest of your day. Take care and bye for now.
You've been listening to CUTV News Radio. If you want to learn more about our programming or perhaps be considered for a future show, visit us on the web at www.cutvnews.com. And if you enjoyed listening to today's show, Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, and be sure to write a review. Thanks for listening, and from all of us at CUTV News Radio, we hope you have a productive and inspired day.